getting nudges late at night. To walk and walk for days and through our lives. Through people's houses picking food from plates. Through people's gardens picking locks on gates.
Welcome everyone to episode 8 of The Process. It's been a truly exciting year for comics, with three summer blockbuster films bringing some of Marvel's most beloved characters to the silver screen, more than half a dozen creator-owned comics garnering interest from the television industry, the relaunch of 52 DC Comics number one titles, and the return of the great Brian K. Vaughan. We're here tonight to bring you the regular goods, but we'll be talking about our favorite comics of 2011 later on in the show. As always, tonight's show is being moderated by your three faithful hosts, Curtis Weeb, Brian K. Lindsay, and myself, Jeremy Holt. How are we all doing tonight, guys?
Absolutely fantastic.
Doing, you know what? I was just saying before we started the show, this has been a really like weird week for me. Like, it's been one drama after another. And then to top it off, this morning we're going to meet some friends for coffee and breakfast. And I go to my car and my garage and my car have been broken into. So
what?
Yeah.
So it was, did that take anything?
They smashed up my car window and they broke the door and they stole my CD player, and stupidly I left my CDs in there. Luckily, nothing out of the garage was taken because I had like a really expensive lawnmower in there. But now that they've heard it on the podcast, I'm probably gonna go steal that too. So
that's absolute balls. I had my car broken into one time. They smashed the back window and they rifled through my cassette tapes and they found like the platters and ELO and they didn't want any of it. And they missed the ashtray full of like $60 worth of like old coins. But what then, I woke up like obviously in the morning to go to work, didn't see the smashed little quarter panel window, went to start the car and it wouldn't start. And I'm like, what the hell's going on? And it's just nothing is happening. So I popped the bonnet and they stole the car battery.
Yeah, well, you know, they done the same with me. They were attempting to do the same, but I think they gave up because mine's really bolted in there. And our neighbor, they actually tried to steal his car because they'd actually ripped open the casing. It's an older, you know, an older vehicle. But they actually he took the battery out because that car had been stolen before.
Really?
Yeah. So I mean, my neck of the woods is a little bit dodgy. It just seems like it's all happening at once. So anyway, it's been a strange start to the day for me. You know. In the other dramas this week, it hasn't been great, but there's other great things to talk about. I just thought I'd share that with the listeners out there that even like, you know, humble riders get their cars broken into and stolen. So,
well, to chime in about the whole car thing, I don't have a car, but I had a homeless guy threaten to kill me. So while I was waiting for the train, that sucks too. So, and he was bothered. I was reading a comic book and he totally came up to me and bothered me and then threatened to kill me because I looked at him and just like, okay, well, I can't read this now.
That's perfect fodder for your Hobo Fight Club story.
Oh, I know. Totally.
Definitely.
Anyway, there's a little nice intro. I mean, it's been a very strange week. Let's just transfer over. Let's talk about something good, for Christ's sake. Let's move on to the Wow Factor, where we talk about some comics that overcome the misery of our daily lives and let us escape for a little while. I actually had two that I picked up this week and actually got a chance to read. I'm not going to talk too much about both of them. I'm just going to briefly talk about the first one was the Ninja Turtles.
Oh.
And I picked it up kind of on a whim. You know, I loved them as a kid, loved the TV series. And, you know, I read even some of the comics back in the day, not the originals. They had released these kind of more cartoony ones based off the TV series.
Yeah.
So I thought, oh, you know what, it's a bit of nostalgia. I want to give it a go. And I had to actually get the reorder of the reprints, which I actually kind of like the covers a bit better, the black and white ones. But I don't know if you guys have read the series or know much about it. They're actually rebooting it. And I guess my wow factor about the Ninja Turtles, I mean, I wasn't super blown away by like the writing and the art. The art was pretty good. But one of the things that I really appreciate about this series is that it really talks and tells about how the comics medium is so versatile. And they're basically going back and rewriting the entire history and mythology of the show or of the original series. And it's interesting. And I just like that with comics, you can do that. You can take something that, you know, has its own history, but you can just go back and do something entirely new. And it's still interesting and it's still fun to read. And the second one that I wanted to talk about was Our Love is Real.
Mm.
And did you guys get a chance to read that one?
No, I heard good things.
It's awesome.
Yeah. The art is unbelievable. The writing is done by Sam Humphries and the artist Steven Sanders, It's a one shot, you know, complete in one full sitting, and it is so weird. It's basically about, you know, a little bit in the future when there's all these different types of, you know, sexual deviancy, but I mean, it's pretty status quo. Everyone has their own little fetish, you know. They're talking about, like, you know, human on animal love, human on plant love, human on minerals. It's all very, very strange. And I mean, I'm not even really doing it justice, but he basically meets this other person who is a mineral sexual, the main character. He's like this kind of a cop who goes around beating up all these, like, he calls them hippies, and he goes around, like, you know, vegisexuals. He wants nothing to do with them, so he's beating the shit out of them for most of the comic. And then he meets this person who's a mineral sexual, and they start kind of talking, and you know, he finds out that he's attracted to her, and there's a big twist and reveal at the end, which, I mean, that's what half the comedy in the book is the twist ending. And it's just awesome. Like, the storytelling is awesome. The timing is great. I mean, the art really sells a lot of the comedy because you're getting such funny facial reactions. And I don't know. It was just entertaining from beginning to end. So those are my wow factors, Ninja Turtles and Our Love is Real.
So there's a real sort of animal theme going on there, Kurt. You've got your fetish. Jeez. I got to say, I love Israel. There is a panel of man on dog relations, and it's not gratuitous at all. It's actually like the facial expression of the dog. It just says so much. I always thought that panel was fantastic, and the dog's got like is doing like dress up sort of role play type thing, and it sounds so bad, but it comes out so just insanely well. It's you've got to read it to believe it, basically.
Yeah, and that was the thing. I heard around about it, and I asked my friend, he runs a comic store that I buy from, and I'm like, is this worth giving a go? Because, I mean, it looks pretty ridiculous. And he's like, oh, man, it's super funny. And, yeah, I mean, you think you'd be flipping through, and you thought if you saw a panel with, you know, man on dog love, you'd be like, this is unbearable. But it's just read it. Anyway, that's mine. How about you, Jeremy?
I'm going to have to go with the Infinite Vacation issue 3. Not going to lie, I was a little upset that this thing was completely backed up on scheduling. I think Nick Spencer's kind of overloading his plate, but that's a whole different issue. But I did really like the first two, with the exception of, you know, there are some pages with photo references, which I really don't like. But the story is so good, and the characters are so interesting, that I always overlook the things that I absolutely hate about these issues, because by the end of it, I'm just like, oh, God, that was so good. And for this third issue, there's this really bizarre torture scene that just, it gave me chills. Like, the art was is fantastic. Christian Ward's art is awesome. I think he gets better with each issue. But the subject matter and this torture scene, basically, the main character is anybody who hasn't read it, it's about a guy who can basically take a vacation from his life, and he can go into other dimensions of himself. So there's like different planes of existence where he exists in multiple, frames of time. And he realizes that these other hims are being killed, and he doesn't know why. So he's trying to figure it out. And there's one version of him that is basically, from what I understand, is just tracking them down and killing them. But it's just bizarre, and it's creepy, and it's kind of cool. So yeah, I think that even with some of the faults I find with some of the direction, as far as what Nick Spencer wanted to do with the issue and the story, I still think it's a fantastic read, and I hope it stays on schedule. I hope there is an end to it, but yeah.
Yeah, I thought that was just a 4-issue series.
I don't know. I mean, at this point, I've completely lost track of how many issues there's supposed to be, and because I think it was like 4 or 5 months between issues 2 and 3.
Well, yeah, it was supposed to come out in February.
Yeah. But it was good. I liked it.
Nice. All right. Well, I'll chime in with my last one. I'm actually going to just buck the trend a little bit and first do a prose piece. And I've been reading Stephen King's latest novel, 11/22/63. And it's really good, to be honest. I'm digging it. I'm a massive Stephen King fan. I always have been. And, I mean, they talk about, you know, the golden age of sci-fi was when you were 13. That's basically how it comes down to it. It was when you sort of grasped onto it. And as a teenager, I read a lot of Stephen King, and a lot of his latest or later works haven't really sort of rung my bell. But this one, I'm maybe about a fifth of the way into it, and I'm really digging it. It just feels like sort of pure Stephen King. It's just got that vibe that you can hear his voice in the words, and I really dig that. He's got that really old-timey, I'm telling you a story around the campfire sort of chat to his narratives, and yet there's still some complexity to the structure. And there was one line that I absolutely loved in the story. It's basically this guy who finds a way to travel back in time. And when you go through this portal, you always end up in 1958. And so he ends up with another guy hatching a plan for going back in time, waiting 5 years and stopping the JFK assassination. And hopefully from there, there won't be race riots, there won't be RFK won't be killed, maybe MLK won't be killed. All these different things could possibly sort of like chaos effect out from that. So he goes back and he decides, well, he's got 5 years sort of thing. He's going to try and fix this one other massive trauma that he knew affected somebody else. And it takes place in the town of Derry. And if you've read Stephen King literature at all, you know the town of Derry. It's phenomenal, like the history and the mythology is built into this town. And as soon as the town turned up, it was like finding a really good character had come back to life. It was excellent. And obviously going to Derry in 1958 means the time period takes place just a little bit after another Stephen King book that took place in 1950s Derry. And there's a line, and it says, in Derry, reality is a thin skim of ice over a deep lake of dark water. And I thought that sentence wasn't overly lyrical. It didn't come off as some sort of wanky poet. It was just, it's got the things I like. It's got an adverbial phrase first. It's a metaphor, and it's dark. Like, it gives you that idea that, yep, you read that one line, you know what Derry is. And the way King does that, I think, is absolutely brilliant. So I can say, I haven't finished the book yet, but I'm absolutely loving it. So hopefully anybody out there that's thinking about picking it up should definitely do that. Do you guys read any Stephen King at all?
I haven't since I was like a lot younger. And I mean, I barely remember them. It's something that I've really considered going back and like, now that I have a bit more time, actually committing to some of his novels and just going through them. I do want to read The Dark Tower. I know that's kind of a cliche, but I really like the comics, and I love the world that he's developed in there. And I just really would like to see the more detailed, you know, account of that series rather than the comic. I enjoyed the comic, but I feel there's a lot more that obviously I'm missing.
Yeah, that series. And the brilliant thing is he ends it, I think, perfectly. I read the last sort of pages of the last book and I put it down. I was like, what a piece of crap. That was the worst thing ever. And then an hour later, I was like, no, that was the only way you could have done it. Like, once I sort of, like, my gut reaction was like, no, it should have been something else. And then you think about it and you go, no, that's about all that really could have happened. And it is brilliant. I absolutely love that series. But yeah, check out, like, Dead Zone, I think, is genius. The Shining was my favorite novel for years and is still sitting in second place. So I don't know whether this latest one is maybe on that level. I guess I'd have to finish it. But it's certainly pretty fantastic. I also wanted to just quickly spotlight, obviously, wow factor should include comics, I guess. The latest Secret Avengers issue from Warren Ellis and Michael Lark. It's built on a 9-panel structure, mostly gridded up, and it breaks from that time to time, similar to a lot of 9-panel grids where two of the panels will sort of meld together. But it controls the flow of the issue, and it's not a bad issue. I didn't think it was perfect, but there's a moment where there's a big knockout punch from Captain America, and he decides to actually do that over a double-page spread. And I wasn't massively – I mean, you've only got 20 pages to get through this done in one story, and he chocks a lot into each page, obviously, with the 9-panel grid. But I liked the idea that if you've got a 9-panel grid, when you commit a double splash, you're telling the audience, pay attention right here. This is the big moment. And there is a – it's more than just Cap punching somebody in the face. It basically it's a sort of big revelatory moment for the menace that they're working against. And I like that idea that you're controlling the pace of the reader, and through that pace you're telling them perhaps what to think and probably what to feel. So I thought that was a really cool sort of, you can only do this in comics. You couldn't do that in a novel. Imagine turning a page in a novel and there were just two big words across two pages. That'd be a bit weird. But with comics, you can do that. You can use the form. And I think that's, I mean, you look at that. I like that. That's my wow factor as well, because somebody can learn from that and just go, oh, okay, that's how you use pace. That's how you make an impact. So, yeah, that's it for me this week, guys.
Right on.
All right, let's go into our progress then. So we've got to talk about what we've been doing over the last few weeks. So, Jeremy, do you want to kick us off? What have you been up to, mate?
Yeah, I've been up to a couple things. I'm still mostly trying to transition into this new life of living in a different apartment and all that. And finally have my room set up, so I'm kind of getting back into writing, which is good. I started writing a new series that was inspired by a series of very bad dates that I've been on recently.
Really? This sounds good.
Yeah, it was actually strongly based off of one girl in particular. I kind of mulled the idea over. There's a friend of mine, this artist, David James Cole, that I've been friends with for a few years now. He did art for one of my first comics, Death Tax, as a pitch at New York Comic Con a year ago. And I've been pitching him stuff for so long, and he just was like, no, I'm not feeling that or whatever. And I pitched him this idea, and he just ran with it. He was super excited about it. And it's about a very strong female character that is inherently strong, which I know we've talked about in the past. She basically runs an art gallery in New York, and this is set like 40 years in the future. And underneath her art gallery is a sex dungeon that she basically uses to feel powerful and feel in control. And it's in a society where everything is so super saturated with social media that ideas kind of bleed into each other. So, she actually is one of the few people that is kind of disconnected from all of that. She also has a special power, and there's that whole angle to it. But so he's attached, which is great. Primordial, which is my 1940s New York period story. My artist came over yesterday and had a meeting, and he showed me three new pages, which look fantastic. He also decided it was totally appropriate to have two bottles of wine at 11 a.m. So we had two bottles of wine at 11 a.m. and just talking comics, and it was awesome. And also with Death Tax, I had to find a new artist for that. So JC Grand is the guy that I found, and he's been working on the pages. He's just finished the first 22 pages. Other than that, there's that secret project I mentioned. Had a video call with the artist today, and got to see his studio, which is cool. And he showed me a cover he's working on and several sketches. And there's another my Twin Peaks toy story concept is kind of working out. The girl that's working on it, she's freed up her schedule, so she's starting character sketches. And my hobo story is actually currently in pre-production with character sketches with a new artist, this guy Aiden Mountford, who found me on Twitter. And thanks to Twitter, I was able to get him on board. And I actually also had a call from Steve Niles today, which was a interesting conversation. So talking about future projects and whatnot and what he's working on. So that was pretty cool.
Nice.
That's very busy progress report, man. You're really keeping your finger in a lot of pies.
Yeah, trying to. It's really hard because I feel like you guys are still, you guys are hitting your strides with your work and your writing, and I feel like I'm just playing this weird game of catch up. It's kind of normalizing now. So
I don't know. I think when you hear my report, you'll see, just how much you've caught up. But before I get to that, Kurt. Oh, actually, no, Jeremy. So this sex dungeon date that you went on.
Yeah.
How'd that go? Or is that a different podcast?
Maybe it might be a different podcast. It was fine. It's just really interesting. Women are just so different. Like, not just different interests, but some of them I was just like, these are two different species, like completely different worlds. So it's been an eye-opening thing, and it really does. I can see why writers live vicariously, honestly.
Yeah.
It just provides so much to write about. And if, I'm not the type of person that could sit in my room all day long and come up with ideas. I need to feed off of the interaction of the world around me.
Definitely. That's actually something I think that came up in the Sensation Spectacular between Kurt and Owen Weisman, talking about writing what you know.
Absolutely.
And I love the comment that he made where he was like, you see a lot of 20-year-olds who are great polymaths, but they're not always just fully formed at literature because they haven't lived enough. And what we're after here with writing is you need experience to feed that. Like, it's not just straight up numbers, and it's not just sort of being able to paint a tree. It's not that I want to say that those things are all easy. I couldn't do either of those things, but we need to feed from experience to a degree. So sounds like you're getting some very cool experience, Jeremy.
Trying.
All right, we'll move on to Kurt. Kurt, any Sex Dungeon dates this week, mate?
No, I didn't have enough time for my weekly one, so I just, you know, I had other things I had to take care of. But, yeah, this week has been great, and it's a lot to do with projects kind of coming together in a really nice way. The first one was, I'll talk a bit about Peter Panzerfaust. We originally, it was going to be Tyler who was going to be doing all the art on that. He's going to do penciling and coloring, but the coloring process was taking him a lot longer than he'd expected. He was actually taking as much time to color one page and he wants to pencil and ink it. So we kind of looked around and we ended up hiring Alex Lazo, who colors Morning Glories.
Yep.
So he's on board for that, and we're just getting in the pages for that. He sent us the test, and it looks really, really great, and we're really happy that GM Valentino, you know, we're a little bit hesitant because, you know, sometimes he likes something and sometimes he hates it. You just have no idea which way he's going to go. But he absolutely loved what Alex is doing, so that was great. And the pages have been coming in ridiculously fast for Grim Leaper, and which he does a full pencil, ink, and color in a day. Every single day, besides the weekends, he's sent me an email with a completed page. And so that's been interesting just to see him, you know, one of the best parts about that actually is when I wrote the script, I thought it was okay. Like I thought there was going to be some funny stuff in there, but you know, I think with humor, I'm always really overly critical about my ability to tell like a joke or something in a comic. But I read the script while looking at the images that he sent, and oh man, I was actually laughing out loud because he's really great at expressions and character body language. It's some of the best stuff I've seen, so I'm really excited about that. And then I guess it's something we can talk about a little bit now. With Grim Leaper, it's actually going to be pushed back till June just for marketing purposes of Peter Panzerfaust. But I'm bringing on Ryan and Jeremy and a couple other people. We're going to be filling out the back with the last kind of five pages with some content written by Jeremy, written by Ryan, and then they'll attach artists. And I'm really excited about that. I think something with comics is you get a lot of ads in the back, but if you can somehow take, you know, a concept and develop that with other writers and other artists, it really gives a lot of extra content in the comic that, you know, just would otherwise be filled with meaningless ads that people just kind of flip through at the end. So that's something I'm really excited about. And I guess the last thing I wanted to talk about was the two new projects that I'm putting together. And I met this guy named Andrew McLean at the New York Comic Con, and it was funny because his wife was just there, and who was Andrew talking to? He was talking to, pretty sure it was Trad Moore, and they were just sitting there chatting, but his wife was pimping out his portfolio and just showing someone else that was standing there, and I just kind of cut in and took a look at it, and he's got a really, really unique, interesting style. I mean, it kind of is a little bit like Jeff Lemire, but it's totally his own thing, and so I just cut in on his conversation with Trad and is like, can I get your business card? And so I got his card, and then we followed up after the con, and we've been putting this pitch together. And it's something that I actually wrote years ago. This was actually one of the first comics that I wrote. And the title, and even when I sent it to him, it was still called Wrench. Now, it's a fine enough title on its own, but I was rewatching Arrested Development again, and there is a joke TV series on there called Wrench. So I was like, oh, I'm going to have to change that. So the funny thing is now working with Andrew, he sent me some concepts for the main character. The concepts that he sent entirely changed the entire plot. Not the plot, but the entire setting and the feel and everything. It's all changed since he came on and sent me the character sketches. So that's an interesting way how, you know, an artist, you know, they envision something just based on your write-up in one way. And when he sent it to me, I'm like, okay, yeah, this is perfect. I need to basically rewrite everything. That was really good. And I'm also working with an artist named Jordan Bashan, and she does a web series. I can't remember what the title of it is right now off the top of my head, but she's been doing a web series for a while, and I really liked her stuff. I followed her on Twitter, and I just messaged her with a concept that I had, and she really liked it. So she's just starting to commit some time to that as well. So lots of project stuff happened this time around. I'm actually moving forward. I've written a bunch of scripts, so I'm actually getting ahead of myself a little bit, and I'm still managing to balance the paid work as well. So yeah, it's been very productive. Ryan, how's it been going for you?
Oh, just as good, equally as good, Kurt, of course. Jeez, sounds awesome. Like your stuff's coming across really well, man. And those pages for Grim Leaper look fantastic. Like, people need to know, listening at home, this guy's not just dashing off stuff in a day. He's making art each day. Those things are gorgeous, man.
Yeah, I'm really excited about it. And the nice thing is he's got such a good attitude, and he's really excited about the project, and which is awesome. You can really see it come through in the art, and I'm really happy with it.
Nice. All right. Well, let's see what I've got over the last few weeks. Now, I don't think this had actually started up since our last recording. I think I'd mentioned it, though. A bunch of Canberra people were putting together a comics anthology called Beginnings. And we did look to crowdsource our funding through the Indiegogo site, which is basically just the international version of Kickstarter. We would have loved to have used Kickstarter, but Kickstarter requires an American bank account, which none of us Australians obviously have. So we put it up on Indiegogo, I think, it was about 11 days ago now, and we were looking to raise $2,000. And we wanted that money so that we could do an initial print run, so that we could maybe take it to some cons. No one's really making a profit off this. And so we've set ourselves a 60 days goal of raising those funds. And it turns out we only needed 10. After 10 days, we had our $2,000. So I was really stoked that it didn't take us that long at all, and people really stepped up. And there's a lot of the money basically came from pre-orders for this. It'll be about 100 pages. It'll be a little A5 sort of digest trade paperback. So we can officially announce that the Beginnings anthology is fully funded and is ready to go.
Oh, that's awesome, man. Congrats. It's great.
Yeah, I'm really proud of like the work everyone has done behind the scenes. A bunch of the Canberra crew have really, really worked hard to make sure that everything was set. And I haven't had, to be honest, a very heavy hand in putting together a lot of the sort of monkey work, the setting up of the Indiegogo page, the nuts and bolts of getting printer orders and things like that. And we're getting these little buttons made, like little badges that you can sort of pin onto your bag, your boot, your forehead, whatever you feel like. And the other members of the crew, the guys and girls, they've lifted the heavy loading on that. I just sort of sat in the background and said, yeah, I'll help out when and where I can. So I'm really indebted to them. And basically we just pushed it really hard on Twitter. And it's really interesting because with Indiegogo, it matches your stats of seeing who had their links clicked on to get to the site. And you can just see if you pump it on Twitter repeatedly, you get people clicking through to it, and then you get sort of people pledging their money. And it was really, I think in the first day we raised over $600. And that was just phenomenal. And there are people, personal people that I know that have bought it. There are people I know on Twitter that have now pre-ordered their book as well. And I believe it was image superstar artist Adam Gein who contributed the final $2 we needed to get to $2,000. So that was very nice. He didn't even take anything for that pledge. And it was just for the love. So I was very appreciative of that. And I guess we've got 50 more days to raise more money. And I mean, by the time this goes to where it'll probably be maybe just a handful of weeks to go. But I'm really hoping people do continue to pledge and pre-order the book, because as most people know with comics and Kickstarter or Indiegogo, it's basically just – it's pre-orders. It's just you can get your copy reserved, ready, and make sure that it is printed, and that way we're not going to sell out and you'll miss out. So hopefully over the next 50 days a bunch of people will get in and still pledge. We've still got some really high-end perks to sell on there, one of which is Kurt, who so magnanimously offered to critique somebody's 10-page script. So – I'm waiting for some poor sap to take that one up, and Kurt can get his red pen and scalpel out and tear them to shreds and send them back home. And we've got an original piece of art from Stephen Sanders from the Five Fists of Science graphic novel that he did with Matt Fraction. Yeah, that's $150. So you can support indie comics. You can also get a piece of original art, which I think would be really cool. And I think we've still got Kelly Sue DeConnick has offered her time, 45 minutes on Skype, to chat to anybody about comics and work management and whatever you like, really. And knowing Kelly Sue as I do, that is a phenomenal opportunity, because she is somebody that really knows what she's doing, and especially with obviously a creative husband and also two little kids, the fact that she can still pump out comics I think is phenomenal. She's somebody that somebody should take that offer up and pick her brain, because she's got a lot of tips that she can add in. So it's been really successful, and I'm amazed that it took 10 days to raise the money. I'm amazed that so many people stepped up. So that's been a big part of the past few weeks for me, to be honest. Another thing that I've been doing is, as Kurt just dropped the exclusive mention on, few of us are looking to get our dirty little hands in the Grim Leaper. And you can be rest assured, Kurt, I've been working in the background. I haven't really sent you through anything yet, but I want to make sure what I send through is quality. So I've put together a short story idea. I've scripted the 5 pages, and I'm doing my own little 5-page critique and red pen scalpeling it to death. And I feel it's coming together really well. It's got a match of both a really good sort of high concept of what the basic idea of the 5 pages is, but at the very end of the story, I also get that moment, and I've spoken about this before, I'm putting the Galactus in the Dazzler. I've got this moment at the end that I know the artist that I've already got lined up would really be able to sell, and I think it's just something that would stick in your mind. And if it makes Kurt wince a little bit, I'll know I've done my job right. So hopefully soon enough I'll be able to send it through. But I've been tinkering with that a fair bit, and it's been really interesting writing 5 pages, man.
It's hard.
Yeah, it's a short deadline. It's and I know we all write like 5-6 page little short things for pitches, but they always end with an ongoing type splash there to wet your whistle, and this thing is to sort of knock you out. And it's a totally different muscle. And so I'm trying to make sure over 5 pages that each page really, really stands alone. I'm flexing the muscles that I use on my comic writing challenge site, Thought Balloons, where we write 1 page a week. And you always want your page to be really strong. Well, with this 5-page short, I'm really, really trying to ensure that each of those 5 pages has its own little theme and structure and set and works almost standalone. But builds to a whole. It should be a crescendo to the end. So I've been tinkering with that a lot. And then the last time I announced that I had a book deal with SecArt Publishers, and I don't think I was able to announce the topic of the book, although it's all over Facebook now. Putting together a book of essays about Daredevil, which he is my favorite superhero and sort of always has been. And it's just an absolute dream come true to put together. Like, well, it'll have to be the definitive tome because there isn't another one. So that sort of puts us ahead of the race. And it'll be a book of essays all about Daredevil. And I've lined up some really, really good writers that are going to go off over the next sort of two and a half months and script their essays and get them into me at the start of next year. And I've been toiling away on my second essay for the book, and I've reached about 3,000 words into it, and it's feeling good. I'm writing an analysis of Ed Brubaker's run on Daredevil, which is a phenomenal run. If you were ever going to start on Daredevil, you could probably start with Brubaker's run. And I mean, you might not know everything that happened before. Obviously, there were 500 issues before then, but it's just so well written, and it's got a really good noir vibe. And so I'm writing about that, and that takes up a bit of time. I mean, I've been doing a lot of research. I've been reading a hell of a lot of Brubaker's comics, obviously, but I've been reading a lot about outside material and doing a lot of internet research to make sure that this essay is as informed and sensible as it certainly should be. So that whole process is really coming together well, and one of the other contributors has already submitted his essay, which I thought was a stand-up act. The guy... He punched it out really quickly, and he sent me an email, and he said, "Look, I'm nearly finished. What do you want me to do?" And I just sent him an email back, and I said, "Look, when you finish, Control S, close it, and you have to wait 7 full days. And 7 full days later, open it up, read through it, and any of those little mistakes that you see, take care of them, because as an editor, I don't want to be fixing every little brain fart that you've got on the page. You fix the little things. If you're happy with it, then you can email it straight through." And he's a champ. He did. He totally waited the full week, got it set, sent it through. So I'm looking forward to reading that over the next week and starting the editorial process that'll lead to a book being published. So it's been a few different things. It's been fundraising, it's been essay writing, and it's been a little bit of comic writing as well. And it's been a pretty good few weeks, I must admit. But that's my progress, boys.
Awesome.
Sounds very good. So for the rewards, did you come up with that, or was that a combined effort on some people for the pledging?
Mostly that was just me emailing creators that I know and begging and pleading and offering my naked body to them, which Kurt just jumped all over.
And that's true.
Thanks, Kurt. Corroborate the story. That's nice. Yeah, it's all just people I know. sort of cool. in the system, and they were able to add some things. I mean, Justin Jordan had a script critique that got picked up the other day, $150 for his 22-page script critique, and Steve Sanders was offering an art portfolio critique as well, and one of the Canberra boys actually picked that up, so that'll be pretty cool. And we've actually got a handful of other perks that are still – oh, Ed Brisson also – your friend and ours, Ed Brisson, he's put in that he'll letter somebody's six-page pitch. And, man, if people have any sense at all, it's $80. They will pick that up for a steal. Because, yeah, man, I mean, we've talked about it before. Lettering is one of those things that – I mean, I was reading a comic the other day and the lettering in it was – it was really bad. It was an independent comic, but the lettering in it was just phenomenally terrible. And you can see what a difference it makes. And we all know how superb Ed is on that front. So, I mean, there are people that usually just sort of like, I've got a mate who does a lot of lettering for me for free. And luckily, he's not too bad at all. But Ed Brisson, he's on another level. So if somebody picks that up, they'd be a very smart person. And, yeah, we've just got a few other perks that you can only do, I think it's 12 perks at a time on Indiegogo. Okay. So we couldn't put everything on there. So we've still got a few that, a few really exciting ones. There's one in particular that is, I think once we put it up, it'll definitely go. It's a very exciting perk, but we've just sort of got to wait for the right time. But yeah, it was basically just me calling in favors, and I was really humbled by the amount of people that just emailed back. Some of them literally within, I think I got three different people within the first 10 minutes of the email being out, just said, yep, I'm yours. What do you want me to do for it? And nice. I think that's indicative of the sort of community we're a part of. Everyone's a stand-up person. Every single one of these people has offered their time and their perk completely free of charge. There's nothing they can really get out of it. They've just, thrown their hat in the ring to help me and a few mates, which, yeah, it really makes you smile, I must admit.
All right, so we're going to move on to Grillem. For this section, Dino Caruso chimed in with the question, after a pitch/submission has been rejected, what do you do with the 5-page sample? Chuck it out and focus on new things, or try to breathe some fresh life into it somehow? It's probably a case by case type of thing. What do you guys think? Well, I mean,
I think.
Go ahead, Curtis.
Yeah, I was going to say, I think the five page pitch is, it's always good practice, and it's something that it is an art form in itself. Is getting that 5-page pitch. It's a fully self contained story, with that last page being the hook that is going to sell the story, sell the series, and it's great practice to write them. Now, whether you just throw them out after or whether you redo it and try it again, it's up to you. But I think if you've rewritten it and you've repitched it and you've done it two or three times and it doesn't seem to be working, it might be time to consider to move on to something else. But these 5 pages are great ways to fill out your portfolio. Especially if you have an artist that's like, okay, well, I gave the 5 pages and, I guess it didn't work out, and they're okay with that. And you can just ask them, hey, do you mind if I use this as part of my portfolio? I've mentioned it before that when I approached Stevie Cebulski, I had a fully printed out, different artists, different genres, different tones. And I made that into my writer's portfolio. And you can have that in your portfolio, and it's really great, because if it's never going to do anything else, it may as well show, what your talent is, because it may not have been denied based on the writing. It may have been denied on just the story didn't work for the editor, or maybe they didn't like the art so much. If you still feel confident with the quality of it, definitely keep it and use it in some way to promote yourself as a writer.
Yeah.
Yeah, I got to agree with a lot of that. And I felt really conflicted with this question, because your initial sort of gut instinct, I feel, is to just say, well, it didn't really work, bury it. And maybe not under, 40 feet of concrete, but how else are you going to – it'll be really hard to repurpose that, those same pages, into another story or anything like that. And I think Kurt's idea, and I was thinking exactly of what you had done with CB, Kurt, just put it all together into a portfolio to show that you can write 5 pages sequentially, that they come together well on the page. The other thing I'd say is maybe just strip it for parts. If there's a good line in there that you can repurpose, maybe you should use it, because it's just going to be buried on that one. So, yeah, most of the time I feel if those things don't work and they're not self-contained, those 5-page stories, at least not usually, it's probably just time to maybe move on.
I mean, what I want to add to that is if it gets rejected, that sucks. I know I've been there. I know all three of us have been there. But the important thing is, like they, like Ryan and Curtis said, is variety, to have variety, because I've met guys who have pitched things and it's been rejected, and their response is, but why? It's awesome. That's a whole different problem. I know that Charles Soule had posted a really insightful thing on his blog about, you know, how to help someone out and the etiquette that is involved in that. And to, you know, strong arm your way into a conversation with an established creator, and then they give you some honest notes and you not only take it badly, but you get defensive. I mean, you're going to lose every time, because you're not going to, if, I don't know, you just can't win that battle. And I see, I've met a lot of guys that, you know, they cling to an idea and that's it. They have one idea. I think, Curtis, you said you had you knew a guy at New York Comic Con, you saw that, you know, it had been years and he had done like one page or something. And
yeah, it was someone that I went to and I met in Calgary about 2008, and he had his portfolio there and he had a booth and a table. And I remember seeing those pages in 2008 and thinking, no, you know, these are really great. And then I asked him what he'd been working on. He's like, well, you know, there's some new stuff in my portfolio. He added two pages to that same story and he was still pitching it.
Yeah. So, I mean, yeah. But, you know, honestly, when I wrote Death Tax, I clung to that story for, I'd say, a couple years. Like, I really was scared to try to write something else. I just kept reworking it, trying to make it better. And it was getting rejected. And I thought, you know, there was one point where I realized I had structured it all wrong for single issues. I kind of structured it as one full graphic novel, but I was pitching it as single issues. And to think to go back and rework all of it, I was just like, I got to move on. I got to see if I can write something else. And it took a couple weeks for me to actually come up with something else. And, you know, it's scary, but it's the best thing, because once you do it, you start to respect the process. You start to understand, you know, how to create ideas, how you get comfortable in your headspace when you write. These things you have to temper with and experiment with and figure out what works for you. So, yeah.
I think that's pretty well covered. I mean, we may as well keep this one shorter, because we have some stuff we want to cover later that I think will be a lot longer anyway. So let's just move right on to the process. One of the things we want to talk about in the process today is technology, and basically how we use it to, you know, write, and how is it helpful and how is it detrimental. So I'm talking about things like, you know, computers, the internet, then, you know, then a whole new revolution with the iPads and touchscreen portable devices. All these topics we want to talk a little bit about today. So Ryan, why don't you start us off? What are your thoughts?
I'm going to say, guys, I love technology as part of the process. And besides just the sort of simple things like having iTunes there and having the internet at your disposal, which I still love that you can just research pretty much anything and it's just right there. I find that all my final work, all my final scripts, everything like that, they're digital. They're all I just use Microsoft Word. I don't use any fancy scripting software, probably because I'm too cheap to purchase it. Microsoft Word is just easy. It works for me. I script everything digitally. However, everything that comes before that, I find technology, it starts to sort of, I feel constricted by it. And the best I can explain it is, as a kid, when we were made to wash the dishes, we'd throw all the cutlery into this scalding hot water and it was all sudsy, and you lost the cutlery under the suds and you didn't want to plunge your hand in there because you'd probably burn your fingernails off. So what we used to do was we'd then get a cup and we'd place that cup into the water and you'd be able to look through the cup to see where the cutlery was on the bottom. It's soaked, obviously, and then we'd throw a hand in and we'd quickly snatch out that. It was like fishing for cutlery. And that's what taking notes and planning digitally feels like for me. If I'm planning or editing something on the computer, I feel like I can't see it all. I feel like I've got blinkers on and I'm just not, like, I'm not getting this holistic view. And I love my iPad, and I do a fair bit of work on my iPad, especially like in a pinch when you're, you know, on a train or something like that, you throw the iPad out and you can do some work. But then when I want to go over that work, I have to either email it to the laptop, which is a bigger screen, or print it off, because I feel like I'm looking through a periscope at this gigantic structure and I'm just not going to be able to take it all in. And I feel like I'm relatively archaic compared to a lot of people. I try to print off a lot of things and sort of lay them out. And I know that that's not very energy conscious, and I know that's paper destructive and all that sort of stuff. But like with this 5-page script I've been working on, I did my first draft, and then I had to print all five pages off, and I wanted to see them 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 across my desk, and I wanted to red pen them, and I wanted to see the flow. And it's the sort of thing I can't do through the computer. Do you guys work solely digitally, or is there a pen and paper aspect to it?
For me, it's absolutely pen and paper. I have to do everything longhand. I like the internet. I like the convenience of it. But I get sucked into the internet and networking. I will sit and start to write something on the computer, and before I know it, I'm on Twitter, I'm sending emails, and I haven't written a damn thing. So I do this structure, which I've been doing it for a while, where I laid out 1 to 22 on a notebook, and I just fill in like 1 to 2 sentences what happened, so I can get a broad overview of the issue and the pacing and the breakdown. From there, I then even write the script longhand. I'm actually implementing a technique that Joe Casey had explained to me and Curtis that he does specifically for Butcher Baker, which is he doesn't write dialogue. He doesn't sit and write pages of dialogue and then plug them back in, which a lot of writers do. What he does is he'll break down an issue with 1 to 22 in a notebook. He'll write panel descriptions and write the pages and leave the dialogue for absolutely last. He'll go through a third pass, read each panel, and just, you know, spur of the moment, whatever he's thinking. And he said that's been working for him to keep dialogue fresh, which I agree. That's how it comes off when I read Butcher Baker. But he said the funny thing with that technique is that he doesn't remember writing most of these things. Like, he wrote Godland and he was reading it. He reread it. He's like, I don't remember writing this. He's like, I don't even know where these ideas came from. They just, wow. I was like, oh, that's interesting. But I'd like to try that. I get hung up on dialogue. I'll rewrite something over and over, and it just feels stilted and forced. And, you know, I want to get faster at writing a script. Like, when I hear Curtis getting an issue done in like a couple hours, I'm just pulling out my hair thinking, what am I doing wrong? But yeah.
Well, I mean,
do you plan like that, Kurt? Do you do like a 1 to 22 sort of one sentence beat sheet?
No, I truthfully, I just sit down and I write the script. I don't do a lot of
awesome. Stuff. That's basically it. He's just awesome.
Yeah.
I don't know. Like, I've tried to do it, and Green Lake, the first arc, I had, I think up to issue 4, I had written kind of a planning, like an issue breakdown where I just said, these are like kind of I basically wrote the main beats of the story for each issue. But after number 4, I got behind with this. This was when I was working full time and I was having a hard time even just getting down to write a script. So I didn't feel like I had the time to write the outline. So I just wanted to get the script written. So issues 1 through 4 were kind of planned. And issue 5, I had nothing written down when I went to sit down to do it. Now, I mean, for me, I feel that keeps things fresh. But there's the problem where, you know, when you're writing a comic series, you solicit your comics 3 months in advance. So I honestly was writing solicitations for Green Wake, the second arc. I wrote 3 where I hadn't even written the comics yet. I didn't even know what was going to happen. So there's a little reveal for everyone.
That's insane.
But, you know, as far as technology, I use, like you guys do, I go straight, I write my scripts completely in Word. Now I have the same problem as Jeremy where I'll sit down and like, today is going to be a script day. And I sit down, I'm like, I'll just check Twitter and see what's going on today. And then I'll be like, oh crap, it's like supper time and I've done nothing. And that's for me is frustrating. I've so, you know, gone so far as to actually disconnect my internet on my laptop and just, you know, throw away my little portable wireless adapter and just be like, I got to focus on writing today. The internet is my biggest time killer because I can easily get caught up in Twitter conversations or email conversations. I mean, I'm getting dozens and dozens of emails every day and it's easy to get caught up in that. And I've been trying to, I think it was Brubaker who said a while ago, only check your email like you check your regular mail once a day.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh my God, I don't think I can do that. But I've been trying to limit the amount of emailing I do. I sit down in the morning, I get all of it done. I'll maybe check it again after I've made some progress, but to just sit there and keep tapping the end, you know, like every 5 minutes to check is a total time killer. Now the iPad is something that I've talked about, and I was actually going to buy one in New York when I was at the Comic-Con. I almost bought one, but you know, it's a really great pitching tool. and it's something that you'd be like, hey, check this out, and you just flip through it. But, you know, I found I didn't bring my computer. I didn't bring any kind of pitching things. I just you know, brought some books for my signings, and I found that I didn't really need it. But and the thing is the difference with you guys. You guys travel a lot. Like, I'm in my house all the time now. You know, I only leave when I have to pay bills or, you know, run errands. So I don't really need a portable device anymore. I even find my iPhone is completely useless to me now because I don't really use it that much anymore. So
yeah,
the technology aspect, other than the internet, I don't really need it that much anymore.
Yeah, I agree.
You're off the grid, man. That explains why you don't reply to my emails. Awesome.
Yeah, no, so you're actually just a dick. You do. I have an email that I'm waiting for, Kurt, about the 5-page story that I need to know if you like. But other than that,
yeah, Kurt, jerk.
No, you know, it's funny with technology. I think the iPad is great, not just from a writing standpoint, but, you know, getting more people into comic books, which obviously helps us because we're writing them. I don't know. I mean, I personally don't like the idea of being a slave to a battery. Like, my computer, an iPad, an iPhone. Like, I couldn't sit and type on a computer knowing that, I forgot the charger and I only have, like, you know, 20 minutes to write now. Like, I don't like that. I can't work under that kind of restriction. There's actually something I want to try. Dennis Hopeless had told me that he uses this software where it blocks him from the internet for a certain amount of time. Like, he sets a time from, like, you know, 8 till 5. He can't get on even if he tries, which would be a good tool because, you know, I do like – sometimes I actually do script on the computer, but it's very rarely because, you know, I do get sucked into all that. But
what's this program called?
I don't know. I need to email him because he had mentioned it, and I was like, oh, that sounds – because he's like – he says, I live by it. I literally need it because I would be sucked into looking on the internet all day long.
So yeah, a lot of creators use it. I don't know the name of it, but yeah, I've heard of a lot of creators that use that. And just, I mean, there's another, it's not a program. What's it called? Oh, yeah, Willpower. Shit.
I don't have any because I'll turn off the internet and it's off. And then 5 minutes later, I'll turn it back on.
So I find, like, I definitely do lose a bit of time into the internet, but I find I'm an alt tab junkie and I'll type a little bit and I'll get like 2 sentences down. I'm like, oh, cool. I'll go across and say something to somebody on Twitter, but then I'll go straight back and you'll notice I chat a fair bit on Twitter and that chat only occurs when I'm writing. But if it's occurring, it generally means I am writing. And I find, I don't know, it's not like it's a little sort of, you know, carrot to hold in front of me, but it keeps me loose. If I'm stuck mid-sentence, rather than just sitting there and stewing on it, I'll go across and I'll sort of, you know, call somebody a dickhead online and then come back. And it sort of appeared. And I find it helps keep – it's like it's working two separate wheels in my brain. And so when one of them slows down, I sort of just jump on the other one for a little bit and the other one gets time to sort out its business. And, I mean, it's not a foolproof method. And it's nothing I'm not going to tell the audience to be like, yeah, do that and you'll be fine. Like, it's the whole point of being an alt tab junkie is that you then alt tab back to the Word document and you get your stuff done. So I find it's like this weird little, I don't know, I think I'm maybe causing myself to be ADHD. it's a possible concern, but I just find like I'm usually buzzing back, but then at the end of the night I sort of go, oh cool, I just wrote 1,000 words on that essay, brilliant, bingo. If I'd switched off the internet, would I have written 2,000? Maybe. But then I don't know, that starts to mess with my mind, and that whole idea of my theory of writing is chaos theory, in that maybe if I'd switched off the internet, I would have written 2,000 words, but they'd suck, and I'm happy with this 1,000 words. And I don't know, I've got a very loose view of the world that everything that happens for that reason, and it happened awesomely because you let it flow that way. And I don't know, it's a good theory that lets me basically do anything, but it also makes me worried that I can't do anything else. So again, that's probably not a great thing to tell the audience. Probably doesn't help.
Well, I think one thing that before we move on to the next section that I wanted to touch on is it's good for the ability, especially when you're scripting. I used to really avoid doing this, which was including photos in the script.
Yeah, and I started doing that.
I used to really avoid that because I felt like it was kind of a cheat, but it's not really. And one of the things, like, especially I've been writing Peter Panzerfaust the last week. That was one of the scripts I got done, number 2. And it's just way easier for me to say, you know, I'm describing a German soldier, rather than being like, he's wearing this kind of hat and he's doing this, I just go to the internet, I Google search it, and I just drop it right into the script.
Really?
And yeah, and especially there's a sequence that happens in a hotel in issue two, and I was just like, I could kind of visualize it, and I just didn't know how to explain it really properly, so I just, you know, just did a general, you know, French hotel search, and eventually I just scrolled through about 30 pictures, and I found the perfect one, and it allowed me to, like, lay out, you know, for Tyler, just a really simple, this is how it needs to look, this is how the staircase needs to be, and, you know, across the way we can see this, and I just dragged another picture in, and it just allowed him to create, he did a kind of a 3D model to show me if he had gotten it right, and he did,
nice.
And it was just way easier than trying to, like, put it into words. So I find that for research and for quick reference, it's fantastic. But yeah, you really have to be careful that it doesn't become a total time sink.
I thought of that.
And as long as you don't think of it as cheating, because it's not. It's just working smarter, not harder. Like, that's, you shouldn't be saying to your artist, I want you to architecturally construct this 1940s French hotel. Pretty sure in 1940 they made hotels in France. Just use those. So
don't feel
too worried that it's like,
there's no format. Everybody's script is different, so don't think that.
Oh, massive!
Yeah. Doing this. I mean, everybody's different. So.
Yeah, quit beating yourself up, Kurt. Shit.
Thanks, guys.
No, it's all right. Well, let's move on to. It's nearly the end of the year, so I figured the roundtable, this process could talk about the best comics of 2011 and just sort of what each of us sort of dug on. And I know all year we've been dropping our wow factors, and so obviously the audience probably has a relatively good idea of what we've been enjoying and sort of what we've been reading, but I thought it'd be interesting if we just sort of laid out maybe just a few comics now, because I write for CBR, I get included in their end of year top 100 comics of 2011 list. And so I'm currently working on my, and each writer within CBR works on their top 10 list, and so I'm sort of working that together. And to be honest, I had about 15, 16 books that I could have put in the top 10. And that to me just instantly says what a kick-ass year it's been for comics. You can't complain about, you know, event fatigue. Well, if you didn't like Fear Itself, don't buy it. Buy something else. Buy The Strange Talent of Luther Strode. You'll dig it. Like, there's so much good stuff out there. And very quickly, I just say, at least this is my top 10 as it stands at the moment. And I don't expect you guys to have a top 10, but I'm sure you'll have a few that you want to talk about. But my top 10 from 10 to 1 is Animal Man from DC. That was brilliant. Daredevil, the relaunch has been good. Legion of Monsters from Marvel. That's absolutely kicked ass. The Cape from IDW. Mm. Absolutely loved this title. Snyder's work on the Batman books has been very solid, as has his American Vampire and main series in the mini. Uncanny X-Force has been really, really, really good. Strangely good for a superhero book, to be honest. And then the top three, Scalped, which has been killing it this year. It's winding up to the end. And I said in my review of issue 54, if Scalped doesn't win the Eisner for best ongoing, I'll eat my hat. That book has always been good. And I think it's so strong right now in the finish. Criminal did The Last of the Innocent, and that series was, I think the first issue of that mini series was possibly the best issue of the year. I absolutely loved that issue. It's like a twist on the Archie mythos, but it's not quite noir. It's just this, it's like sick pulp. It's really, really good. That series was phenomenal. And so if you look over that list, you can see if anybody's listening and you want to pick up any good books from this past year, a lot of these will be hitting trade. They have already, or they're nearby. They do well to check out any of those books. You've got horror, you've got superhero, you've got the big two, you've got indie comics. But I think annoyingly enough, and I really wish it could be another way. And Kurt, if you want to hit mute, I don't know. Quite honestly, my favorite book of this year has been Green Wake. And I'm hoping the audience doesn't think I'm saying that for any other reason than the fact that Green Wake kicked my ass. That book, Kurt, and going into the second arc is really good, and it feels like it is totally different from anything else, but it's so well written. It's phenomenal, man. So you topped my list quite easily too, so congratulations.
Wow, thanks, man. That's honestly, I don't know what to say. That's
awkward.
That's great. Yeah, no, it's great, man. I really appreciate it.
It's awesome.
It's been, 2011 is okay. I was just gonna say 2011 has been a crazy year, and Green Wake has been a personal passion of mine. It's a story I've put a lot of my life experience into, and I think that really shows that I'm a tortured, fucked up guy. So Green Wake is the perfect way for me to tell the world about it. But thanks a lot, man. I really appreciate it.
No, not a problem. It's dominant. It's dominant in the field in so many different ways. But I don't want to gush too much. Jeremy, what comics did you want to highlight from the past year?
I would say that Scalped is definitely up there. I've loved the series since I started reading it. It's just getting better. Jason Aaron's firing on all cylinders. The characters are getting, if they can, they're getting more complex. I know that Curtis stopped reading it, and I tweeted something to him about getting back on it, because I just read the latest trade number 8, volume 8, and I'm not quite done with it, so I think I'm at issue maybe 46 or 47, so I'm kind of behind, but wow, it just makes me want to sit down and write a comic book.
Yeah.
Hey, for the record, Jeremy, I love how you tweeted that to me, hey, I know you stopped reading Scalped, but you should really be reading it. And then you included Jason Aaron.
That's right. That's right.
And that's a dick move, man.
other than that, Day Tripper. I mean, it's not. I don't know if it's technically 2011, but the trade came out earlier this year, and that book is the most beautiful thing that I probably own. With the exception of a few other ones, like Gabriel Bá and Fabio Moon, left to their own devices, write and draw something that is unlike anything I've read. There's complexity to it, but it's not in your face action or in your face superpowers or anything like that. It's just a very real story, grounded in very real situations, very real emotions, and it deals with the idea of death. And somehow they made what every issue is obviously a downer because the main character dies, but it's those actions that lead to his death, and it's about the moments in your life that you choose and where life can take you, which I think about every single day. And the fact that they were able to do it for 10 issues and not missing a beat, every single one was as good as the last. I wouldn't say any was better or worse. It's just phenomenal.
One thing about that book I found is I have openly admitted I cried when I read that book, and I've spoken to other people online, and the interesting thing is they go, yeah, I cried, but I cried in issue 3, and I go, oh no, I cried in issue 5, and for me, I cried in issue 10. It was a big father-son thing, and I read that, I think it was maybe 2 days before my son was born, and it was providence, it was timing, it was everything, and it just, that floored me. And the fact that book can do that, but it can, out of 10 issues, it can do it anywhere along the line to so many different people, that is possibly one of the greatest comic books of all time. It's a piece of literature.
Yeah, I read that too earlier this year, and I loved it. And it's, I think there was kind of this maintained emotion that carried me throughout the whole book, that it was the first one in a long time where I sat down to read it, and I had to, I had to go off and do something, but it was on my list as soon as I got home, I was going to continue reading. And that was one of the first books that has really done that to me in a long time. And yeah, it was just this sustained emotion, this cycle of loss and joy and, just connection. And I think everyone can identify, like you said, Ryan, everyone got hit in a different place. And that's a sign of a good book, that if you can hit those emotional levels with so many different people in so many different ways, that's a sign that it's going to be one of the classics, I think.
Yeah, I think they'll be speaking about it for many years to come. That'll be one that this sort of decade gets remembered for. And I'm pretty thankful for that. I think that's a great book to sort of a cornerstone a decade and to hold up. It's
a testament to the diversity of comic books. There's nothing in here that makes it a traditional comic book that anybody who doesn't read them thinks about. It's just a story, and that's really what all of this is. They're just different stories and the thing that I'm trying to do for this year at the end of the year with, thinking about all the best comics, I'm actually trying to make a list for my family as far as, getting gifts for them for Christmas about tailoring comic books to their interests. So buying them a comic book I think they would like because of the subject matter, not because I think it's awesome. because there's just a variety, and I think Zubkovich had tweeted something about that, and it was a really great idea of just getting people on board. And you know, I think that's something that the DC relaunch missed, was it wasn't tailoring to people that haven't read a comic book. It was tailoring to people that have already read comic books. This is a book I know that I'm absolutely going to give to one of my family members, because it's just a story, and that's really what I love about this medium, just the way stories are told in this fashion.
I liked your point there, Jeremy. One thing that I did this summer was it was a kind of momentous occasion. We celebrated my dad's 60th birthday, and I was really debating what I wanted to get him. He loves history, and he loves, he's a really well-read guy. He reads tons of books, and I thought, you know what, I really want to get him a comic. And Dad has read my comics, and you know, he's enjoyed them, and he's said, you know, the stories have hooked me, and he enjoys them. And I think, but that there's a level of that where it's like, you know, it's my son. I can't hate the crap out of this book. But you know, I thought, what book? My dad was grew up on a farm. He's a farm boy from, you know, the time he was born up till, you know, until his 30s and 40s. He farmed his whole life, and I immediately thought of Essex County. Yeah. And I bought my dad Essex County, and I didn't know how he would respond to it. And I just handed it to him, and I said, Dad, I think this is something that, you know, I know you don't really read comics, but there's a real heart to the story, and I think it's something that'll speak to you. And I talked to him a few weeks later, and he'd read the whole thing, and he loved it. He said, yeah, I get this story. It really speaks to me. And that's my, you know, my dad, he's, you know, a 60-year-old man who, you know, it would have no interest in superhero stories, but Essex County is something he totally related to. And I thought that was really great. And so that just reminded me when you brought up that list for your family, I thought that was pretty cool.
Yeah. I mean,
that is a really good idea, Jeremy, that tailoring it to people you're buying it, and yeah, buy them comics. Like when I was younger, I would have loved to like have somebody that was buying me comics, and I buy my nephews comics now, and they're, you know, in their teens, and you can buy them for adults as well. I just wish people would stop thinking comics equals like superheroes.
Right. Yeah. Exactly.
Because there's so much more. And even if it is a superhero book, sometimes it's still good shock horror. Like sometimes, like I look at Uncanny X-Force, and that book, it's about like addiction, and it's about relationship sort of woes, and it's about sort of evolution of people, and it never states any of those things, but the subtext is there. It's an incredibly smart book. It's not just about, you know, Wolverine slashing people, although you get that. It's about other things. It's got deeper meaning, and people need to be able to open their mind a little bit to view that, because when you do, you can really see that it's well written and that it's smart. And so I think, I think spreading that gospel over the Christmas season, Jeremy, is a top move.
Thanks.
All right, well, I'll do my my list. I came up with the top three, and I'll start off with my honorable mentions. My first honorable mention is Footprints by Joey Esposito. And I picked this up at the New York Comic Con, and I've known Joey. He's the head editor for IGN Comics. And I've been wanting to meet him. We ended up actually having an opportunity to go for drinks together. Really, really nice guy. And, you know, it's one of those things when you pick up a comic by a friend and you're worried because if it sucks balls, you're like, oh, I don't really want to talk to him. But I flipped through it, and it's really quirky. And it's like it's a noir story about Bigfoot, who's essentially he's integrated into modern society. And he's got a team of people that he used to be friends with way back in the day. And it's about them investigating the murder of his brother. And you get all kinds. You get like the Jersey Devil, and you get the Loch Ness Monster. And there's just some crazy characters in there. And you wonder how the hell is he going to like actually make these characters work together. And it's a really great mystery story with some really interesting characters and some great art. So that's my runner-up. My second runner-up, or my honorable mention, is Heart by Blair Butler. And I really like that. I really like that series a lot. And I think it's something, it speaks to the strength of comics in that you don't, you know, it doesn't, I've never seen an MMA comic before. And I went into it with kind of like, oh, I don't know if I'm really going to give a shit about this MMA fighter. But then in the end, I've read issue one, and I was like, I do. I don't really care about MMA. I don't care about that whole subculture, but I was interested in this character. And there was a great world and an interesting journey for this character set out. So those are both comics that I really enjoyed. My top three, however, Number three goes to none other than Ed Brisson, Black River.
Yes.
And this was a great comic. And
it's awesome.
It's so funny. I don't even really want to explain it because there's so many twists and turns in this single, the single 22-page comic. There's something happening in every single page, and most of it is hilarious in a really dark, messed up way. And I'm just going to encourage people. You can get it through 215 Inc. It is an awesome comic. Hilarious, great, fantastic art. I'm not sure how you say his first name, Jomar Soriano. And it's just a real blast. I had a lot of fun with this, and I'm proud to say that Ed's a friend of mine, and I can promote this comic without feeling like I'm, just being a friend. I'm actually being a fan. It's really, really good. Number two for me was Batwoman. And I've talked about it on the podcast before. And, they're telling a really tight supernatural mystery in this series. And I love that it's a strong female character. Now, they haven't, dove into her past a lot. And I don't know a lot about her past because I haven't read the previous, incarnations of her. But so far, they've dealt with her that it's just a matter-of-fact thing. She's badass and she's strong and she's smart. And she's also a lesbian. And one of the things that I really appreciate about this is that it's just part of her life. They show her go on a date. It's not used in an exploitive way where they tie in plot elements to it where, they're exploiting it. It's just, she's a lesbian and she's going on dates with this person that she's attracted to. And it's natural and it fits into the story. And I really want to commend the team on that because they're doing an awesome, awesome thing with this Batwoman series. And my number one comic, Brandon Seifert, if you're out there listening, you've won my heart. With Witch Doctor. And Witch Doctor, we had a chance to interview Brandon, and he's a really nice guy. But Witch Doctor has been a story that I've read all four issues, and I'm going to be reading them again probably next weekend because they're funny, they're gory, and it's smartly written. The pacing is perfect, and the visuals match it in a way that, for me, it makes one of the perfect comic series of 2011. So there it is. That's my list.
That's some good comics on show there, guys. Hopefully some people will go out there and hit up Amazon. And I know, actually, I was talking on Twitter the other night, and I managed to make an Amazon sale for Green Wake, the first trade. So if you spread the word, people will come towards it. And I mean, I look at my list and I think, Green Wake, messed up, Criminal, messed up, Scalp, messed up, Uncanny X-Force, Superhero, messed up, Snyder's work is always pretty messed up, The Cape. Man, The Cape from IDW is basically just his origin story of a villain, and it is the guy drops a bear on some cops. That's, if that doesn't sell the book for you, I don't know what will. Because that moment, that's Joe Hill and Jason Ciaramella. That's them putting the Galactus in the Dazzler right there. That book is so good, but so insanely messed up. Legion of Monsters is a horror book, but it's really, really, that's Dennis Hopeless, and it is really sharp dialogue, and it's not as messed up. Daredevil's quite light and fluffy, and then Animal Man's pretty messed up. So I'm looking at my list, and what I've been immersing myself in for 2011, I start to worry. That's a lot of messed up stuff. But Witch Doctor certainly isn't messed up, man. That's actually a really good choice. That has been a very tight comic this year. Well, guys, if we don't have anything else, I guess we've always got more, but I guess we're running out of time. We'll wrap up here. We'll thank the good folks at Image Addiction for hosting us as always, and we hope that the listeners enjoy it. If you truly dug it, or you want to tell us what books you loved from 2011, why don't you drop us a line on Twitter or on the Facebook page. You can always go there. But I want to leave you all with these final thoughts as we think about our own places in the process. You are not the exception. Sorry, you are the rule. And I know many of you are probably just asking yourself, did he just quote the classic rom-com, he's just not that into you? Yeah, I kind of did. But I think it's important we all realize we're not the exception, we are the rule. So many nascent creators toil away in hopes for a few weeks, thinking their pitch in six pages that they're putting together is going to revolutionize the industry. Well, maybe they don't think it's going to revolutionize the industry, but they think it's going to lead to their gig writing a Bat Family title. Hell, some of these guys are just hoping it'll get picked up by a publisher, and honestly, that's probably too much to ask for. The odds of your first pitch being picked up are slim. You're not going to FedEx your pitch into Image Central on Monday and have them contact you on Friday, especially if that's your first ever piece of comic work. It's just not going to happen. And you're not going to be a Marvel architect within 5 years. I'm sorry. You're not. And don't take this as me being mean, please. It's a wake-up call as much as myself as it is for any of you. Success won't gloriously find you because you really want it. Success is the reward of hard work. Hard work mixed with persistence, growth, fortitude, and providence. But success is not easy, and if it was, it would cease to mean anything anyway, because you know what? We'd all have it. Don't expect or demand that your first work get noticed. Odds are, it probably sucks. I know mine did. But when it gets knocked back like a sweaty prom proposal, use that moment to grow. Seek feedback. Actually learn from it. Take on board why it was a failure. Make sure you don't fail that way the next time you pitch it or on your next pitch. Revise. Don't rush it. Don't look for that immediate pleasure. Take your time. Get some distance. Make your work your best. Then send it out and get knocked back. Now I know you'll have plenty of exception examples to give me. Guys that made it on the first at bat. Guys who knocked it out of the park. Fine. You want to be them? Good luck. Sounds like you'll only have one swing at that ball anyway. The rest of us? We'll tread the worn path because we know if we can outlast you, we're going to make the finish line. You'll be over by a tree with a stitch in your side talking about how it wasn't fair while we're cutting through life with a machete and drinking the sap from the vines to survive. Now, writing is something you should do for pleasure, guys. Pleasure. Do you like make-believe? And do you like to be in control? Yes and yes means you'll probably enjoy writing. Then, hopefully, the publishing will come later. And it might take 10 years, it might take longer. And that's a solitary stretch to serve where it's just you and your words. And you have to be fine with that. Now, you have to be able to sustain yourself as well. Don't expect the world. Don't expect greatness. Don't expect anything. That way, when and if you do succeed, oh, it'll be a sweet surprise. And it'll be one you've no doubt earned. Now, you want to know if they shoot horses? Yeah, mate. They do.
Seas drown, sailors will be locked up safe and dry. And though our doors may knock and rattle in the wind, I'll just hold you tight and we'll not let those others in.